Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The earth moves, and a devastating night in Haiti becomes a grim new day.
I've heard people screaming around us. We have not been able to go down and assess it, but there's fatalities all over the place.
A major 7-magnitude earthquake strikes Haiti, and the vulnerable nation is reported in chaos this morning. The magnitude of the disaster, that calculation is just beginning. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning, everyone. It's Wednesday, January 13th, and The Takeaway this morning is thinking about Haiti at the beginning of an almost unimaginable rescue and recovery process right now.
And a country that is less capable of handling this kind of catastrophe, I can't think of. Let's get right to our top story this morning. It's been a hellish night in Port-au-Prince, the crowded coastal city of more than 2 million people.
The thing is that the communication is really difficult. I heard that the hospital is collapsed, the National Palace is collapsed. I see at least 5 big buildings that collapse. It's really a disaster.
The 7.0 earthquake struck yesterday afternoon and has been followed by at least 20 aftershocks through the night. Buildings, from simple shacks to a hospital to government buildings, all came tumbling down, leaving the city clouded in dust and rubble. Here's another eyewitness.
In a situation like this, I'm quite sure there are going to be a lot of people who are trapped on the debris, so we will need rescue missions.
Even a rough estimate of casualties is impossible at this time.
Dawn is about an hour away in Port-au-Prince, and many injured people are reportedly waiting for help in the streets, crying out from beneath the rubble. Medical facilities are reportedly overwhelmed. This missionary in the city tells the Associated Press,
"The worst thing is how they're going to deal with this. They just don't have the capacity, medically or otherwise, to deal with this kind of a disaster or tragedy."
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says U.S. rescue teams are being dispatched.
"We will be providing both civilian and military disaster relief and humanitarian assistance."
The main United Nations building in the city has been damaged, with an official Chinese newspaper saying 8 Chinese peacekeepers were killed and 10 others missing. We're joined now by Laurent Dubois, who's a professor at Duke University. He's a historian on Haiti. Professor, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
And a sad occasion to be speaking, but I'm wondering if you could help us understand why Haiti is in such a vulnerable situation in terms of infrastructure and its apparent challenge in dealing with a rescue and recovery operation of this type.
Well, it's been, you know, in many ways a very difficult couple of decades in Haiti. Obviously, disasters have struck before, but there's also been a great deal of political turmoil. There's still a UN mission in Haiti, which was actually hard hit by the earthquake itself. So in terms of the infrastructure of the state, in terms of hospital infrastructures, and those sorts of things are really in a difficult situation in from the day to day. So
Right. This
kind of disaster is really going to be a huge, huge burden.
What are you hearing from your friends and contacts? Anything?
I was just more and more shocked as I learned more news. I mean, the scale of the destruction is incredible. The National Palace, which is basically, you know, like the White House or the capital of the country, has collapsed. There are a lot of other major structures. I've heard that the cathedral, which is a beautiful old cathedral in Port-au-Prince, may have collapsed. And obviously just a huge death toll. So I think it's hard to really imagine.
Well, we're going to try to get a sense of the scale of this disaster. Professor Laurent Dubois, a professor at Duke University.
In looking at the markets, futures are mixed. The Dow will start at 10,627. The S&P opens at 1,136. And the NASDAQ at 2,282.
So our call out this morning is to the Haitian community. We want to know how you're coping with this devastating earthquake.
Everything is destroyed in the city. That's my problem to them. I don't know what can I do.
There are Haitian Americans all over this country who want to know the story of how you've tried to reach out, get a sense of your feeling of history and the vulnerability of your nation. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. All this morning, live coverage and all of the details of the aftermath and the recovery as night ends and day breaks in Port-au-Prince. Good morning, everyone. It was a normal late afternoon, winter day in the normally chaotic city of Port-au-Prince, Haiti, when at 5 p.m. a 7.0 earthquake struck the capital and the surrounding areas, toppling everything from simple homes and shacks to the ornate National Palace. The dead and injured reportedly lay in the streets, even as strong aftershocks continued. It's the most powerful earthquake to hit Haiti in more than 200 years, and we want to give you as much a sense of what it's like to be there as within the hour the sun will rise over a city that we understand from all kinds of reports is completely devastated. Here's an eyewitness.
Right now, the situation is really difficult. There's no electricity outside. There's people who need a place to stay. There's people who's bleeding who need medication and care. There's people who's under those buildings that collapse who need someone to get them out.
The infrastructure in Port-au-Prince has been severely damaged and communication with the city is difficult. Nevertheless, we have lines out to Port-au-Prince. And during this segment and for the entire hour, whenever we get somebody from the Haitian capital, we will go to them. Right now, we are speaking with Laurent Dubois, who's a professor at Duke University. He's a historian of the nation of Haiti and joins us from his home in North Carolina. And again, we may interrupt you if we go to Port-au-Prince, Professor, but bear with us, will you?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So you were talking just there at the top of the hour that as you see the little anecdotal reports of the damage, the National Palace, apparently damage to a significant cathedral there in this 80% Catholic nation, it was hitting you emotionally because you know these places very well.
Yes, and I mean, obviously, I know people who are there. I did hear last night. I've got a student who's there right now who is okay, although hurt. So there's a lot of, you know, this is obviously affecting people across the country very seriously.
And tell us about the density of Port-au-Prince and the historic sort of rise in population over the last few decades. You alluded to political instability at the top of the hour there. Give us a sense of how vulnerable these people are.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been, you know, there's been a huge migration over the last several decades from the countryside into Port-au-Prince, and many people have ended up living in pretty tightly packed neighborhoods that are, a lot of them are built on hillsides around and in the capital. So a lot of these houses are small houses, and obviously there are concrete structures, but also other smaller structures. So those kinds of houses are obviously extremely vulnerable in an earthquake. It also sounds, though, that people in concrete houses have fallen down. There's damage in Pétionville, which has a lot of larger houses. I've been following the several Twitter feeds, and it's clear that several of the larger hotels have been really badly hit as well.
Tell us the significance of the hotels, because it's our understanding that the United Nations is based in at least one of those hotels, and we have a report from a Chinese newspaper that perhaps as many as 8 Chinese peacekeepers have been killed in the devastation around the UN headquarters.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I've heard that the UN headquarters has collapsed. That's pretty important since the UN security forces are there and are important, could be an important way to help people. It sounds like the Hotel Montana, which has been a headquarters for many of the UN staff, may have been very badly hit as well. So those are all really significant, and I think people have been communicating from those hotels. But I think the real question is about what's going on in the neighborhoods, in these smaller neighborhoods on the hillsides, where I think there's going to be an enormous amount of devastation, and they're going to need a great deal of help.
And let's remind people that unlike perhaps other nations, when you talk about the United Nations headquarters being hit and some of the NGOs and aid agencies being devastated in this earthquake, you're really talking about the institutions that the people in those neighborhoods actually look to for help. They're not really looking to the government in Haiti because of the situation that you've described, right?
Well, yeah, I think that, I mean, the government obviously is important, too, and there is a local Haitian police force, but the UN police are very present in the city, and they play a big role, so they're obviously quite important. It does sound like at least the student I was in contact with went to a UN camp, and it sounds like the UN camps are maybe serving as places of refuge for people who have had to leave their homes or neighborhoods. But it's obviously just a really difficult and chaotic situation, so it's obviously the sooner that other help can get in, the better.
And the U.S. Aid agencies are sending relief operations, and they're being mobilized from around the hemisphere as well. We're talking with Laurent Dubois, professor at Duke University. You know, we got this report. We've all been looking at the same Twitter feeds, I suspect, overnight. Thousands of people were gathered in public squares late into the night, we heard from a number of sources, singing hymns and weeping. I mean, I can certainly understand the sentiment there, but this idea of gathering in public places, does that sound familiar to you as someone who knows Haiti well?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think we read, you know, I think this is, people are obviously trying to come together. They're obviously, many people can't stay in their homes and are looking for solace. So obviously people are gathering, and I've heard a lot of reports about singing, you know, people are pulling together. I mean, this is a place that has held together in part through the strength of religion and community. And so I think that's, in a sense, a natural and an important response for the communities to hold together that way.
Professor Dubois, you know, we have been saying, and a lot of people have been talking about how ill-prepared this country is to deal with this kind of tragedy. Obviously, they had four severe storms or hurricanes last year, but this is a country that's coming out of deep poverty. But can you kind of help us understand, is this a country for which all aid will need to come from outside the country? What kind of preparedness do they have there to deal with casualties, to deal with injuries?
I mean, there's obviously some, you know, there are going to be some, there's some certain amount of medical infrastructure. I think it's just that it's already strained on a day-to-day level, so a disaster of this magnitude is really going to overburden the system that exists. I mean, I think, you know, there's going to be communities that are going to come together and there's a lot of people there who will obviously be able to help each other, but there's just a kind of a magnitude of the disaster that I think is obviously going to outpace, I mean, it would outpace any structure in a way, but Haiti, I think, is just, is also already so difficult for people to get health care that this is going to be very serious, especially for people who are in more populated neighborhoods and maybe already in really difficult circumstances.
And Professor Dubois, we learned that this earthquake was more devastating than any event of its kind in 200 or more years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long span of history. Before we go to the break in the last few seconds, give us a sense of historically. I mean, what kind of an arc is that, the last 200 years?
Well, it's been, Haiti has, I mean, is born out of a plantation slavery economy. It's born out of enslavement and then a slave revolution against that. It has been a country that has struggled in the international arena as well and been isolated often. So this is a place that kind of, you know, there have been aftershocks of history affecting this country too for the last 200 years.
There's the takeaway. Aftershocks of history, and we're feeling them this morning. Laurent Dubois is with us all hours, professor at Duke University, a historian of Haiti, reporting on the devastating earthquake, a 7-magnitude quake last night in Port-au-Prince. And now at 15 minutes after the hour, let's take a look at some of the headlines we're following.
We've been talking about yesterday's powerful earthquake in Haiti. In the past few minutes, the Red Cross said up to 3 million people have been affected by the quake. Meanwhile, the United States is sending a disaster relief team to the area. The epicenter of the 7.0 quake was near the densely populated capital, Port-au-Prince. Communications have been largely cut. There have been some reports through the night of crowds gathering in the darkness and singing hymns, as John mentioned. They have nowhere else to go. Let's bring you up to date now with some other news. The details are still unclear, but Afghan officials say two American service members have died in a bomb blast in eastern Afghanistan that raises U.S. casualties in the country to 12 this month. Meanwhile, a report by the United Nations says the death toll among Afghan civilians last year was higher than in any year since the war began in 2001. The UN reports that over 2,400 civilians were killed, most in attacks by the Taliban.
Big story out of China. Google says it will stop censoring its search results and is even threatening to pull out of China if state censorship continues there. It's a rare show of defiance in a system where foreign companies accept restrictions to gain access to the huge Chinese market. In economic news, a senior administration official says President Obama is ready to announce a new fee on the country's biggest financial firms. The move is an attempt to recoup as much as $120 billion in Wall Street bailout funds. An announcement is expected later this week. Finally, a second big chain store says it's halting sales of jewelry suspected of being tainted with cadmium from China. That's a look at some of the stories we're watching. Full coverage of Haiti. Stay with us. Good morning, everyone. With the earthquake last night in Haiti, the 7-magnitude earthquake last night in Haiti, Haitians around the world are watching and waiting for news of home.
We were all trying to call. Actually, my daughter was in the car, my niece was in the car, and we're all trying to call at the same time. And my daughter finally got him and said, and I heard her say, "Dad." And I was like, "You got him?" So we did get him, and he said, you know, I said, are you hurt? Are you okay? He said, yeah, I can't believe I'm alive. This was really horrible. Nothing like this. Everything stops to turvy.
Stories of relief and also the suspense as people wait to hear of family members in Haiti. We want to hear your stories, too. Have you tried to reach out, your sense of history for a place that's now beginning to see the devastation in the daylight? Tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We've been in touch with people in Port-au-Prince already this morning, and when we get them on the line, we will go to them directly. You can also send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org.
Meanwhile, in other news, the North American International Auto Show is underway in Detroit this week, and automakers have used the platform to drop some hints that they're going to start hiring this year. More employees, increased hours, overtime, increased production. After one of the grimmest years for automakers in the industry's history, things could be looking up in 2010. Let us get some more details. We have Paul Eisenstein, publisher of thedetroitbureau.com. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Celeste.
Also with us is Bart Bielby. He's currently a temporary worker with GM after working with that company full-time for more than a decade. Good morning, Bart.
Morning, Celeste.
So you worked with GM for more than 10 years. You were laid off, and now you're on a temporary basis with them.
Correct.
Have you heard news that the GM will be hiring again?
Really haven't heard too much of that. We've heard that they want to hire back some of the second-tier workers at the, you know, $14 an hour pay scale. But currently, being a temporary worker, it kind of seems like there's 20 people in line for five positions. So, you know, it's just where you're going to work. I'm currently living in Flint, and I worked in Pontiac for 13 years. And I'm moving to Fort Wayne.
Indiana.
Paul,
we had announcements from several automakers at the auto show. What did we hear from them? They're definitely going to be hiring?
No. Right now, everybody, it doesn't matter who in the industry, Japanese, American, Korean, everybody's hedging bets. The phrase you heard over and over again is cautious optimism about the future. You know, they've been helling back. It was such an awful year. They cut to the point where they were down, not to the bone, they were down to the marrow. And what we're hearing probably can best be summed up by Mark Royce. We have some products that are selling. We're seeing some signs of light. And if that continues, we're going to have to start bringing some people back in some products to improve production, increase production. So what we would likely see, as Bart mentioned, would be a focus on a small number of plants. It wouldn't be surprising in some cases to see them try to bring some people in at the second level, the lower tier salaries that were approved under the 2007 contract. But beyond that, going forward, it could step up remarkably. Mark Royce, who is the president of North America for GM, did indicate that they're looking at the possibility of opening up some of the plants that have been indefinitely idled. Plants with no product right now, such as Spring Hill, Tennessee. When you get to that point, the numbers start to jump, and you could be seeing thousands of workers at every one of those plants.
Well, that's good news. Yeah, from the auto industry. Paul Eisenstein is a publisher of thedetroitbureau.com. Also spoke with Bart Bielby, a temporary worker with GM. But we do have someone on the line right now from Port-au-Prince, and we're going to go now to Franz Neptune. He drives a car for the Haiti Foundation Against Poverty. Good morning. Franz?
Good morning.
Hi there. Can you tell us what's happening in your city today?
Yesterday at 4:58, I was working on this year, and so I don't know how to call it right now because it's worse than what I think. So Haiti is all flat down. There's no house for people to get in to be able to sleep, and there's no palace. There was a prison downtown. It shut down with all of the people in it, and schools and universities. Everything right now is flat.
Is flat.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea in terms of the human cost right now? How many people are injured, or possibly killed?
I can't tell you right now because. From one place that I know, there was 150 kids in that school. It's all flat with all of the students in it.
150 students inside the school that's collapsed.
Yeah.
Are people? Do people have a place to go? Are there people who can turn to government resources or other places?
They're on the street right now. They're on the street sleeping since 4:58 from yesterday. And this morning, everybody's on the street walking. Even me, I'm on the street walking.
You're walking on the street.
No place right now.
Franz, how are you doing? How are you doing there? Are you okay?
I'm okay, but you know, because so the situation is so crazy. It's my first time in life that I have been seeing what I see today. Yeah.
Well, I hope that you continue to be safe and that things begin to stabilize for you, Franz. I know that it's difficult to get a phone line out of there, and you're calling us from your cell phone there. We will try and touch back with you, Franz. Stay safe. Yeah, that is Franz Neptune. He drives a car for the Haiti Foundation Against Poverty.
I mean, he's one of the aid workers there in Port-au-Prince.
Exactly.
I mean, he's part of the infrastructure we were talking about.
In Port-au-Prince, yeah. Right, but he's out on the street walking around with no place to go, as he said, the Franz Neptune. That is from the capital of Haiti, where they experienced a 7.0 earthquake yesterday.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
We continue to get reports coming out of Port-au-Prince, the capital of Haiti, in the aftermath of the earthquake last evening in that country. And we're going to go to someone in the capital in just a few moments. But first, a look at the markets at 30 minutes after the hour. Asian markets ended down. European indices are mixed and the futures are mixed. The Dow will start at 10,627. The S&P opens at 1,136. The Nasdaq will start at 2,282.
Well, as Celeste was mentioning there, to its 200 years of history rooted in slavery with a legacy of poverty and political instability must now be added a devastating earthquake, the worst in more than 200 years, devastating the city of Port-au-Prince, Haiti. The headquarters of the United Nations peacekeeping mission in Haiti collapsed. A large number of personnel are reported missing. 11 peacekeepers reportedly killed, 8 UN peacekeepers from China, 3 from the nation of Jordan. The U.S. State Department has set up a hotline for Americans to inquire about their families in Haiti. Here's the number. It is 888-407-4747. And joining us once again from Port-au-Prince, Haiti, is Franz Neptune. He's an aid worker who normally drives a car for the Haiti Foundation Against Poverty, but he's walking on foot this morning as dawn breaks in Port-au-Prince. Franz, welcome back.
Okay, so right now I'm hello?
Yes, Franz, how did you spend the night? There was no power, we reported, in Port-au-Prince. How did you spend the night?
People lay sheep on the ground and then sleep on the street. There was no power, no anything. They just sleep on the street. And right now they woke up, they are still on the street.
So
crying, screaming, they lost their kids. There's a house. On them after the family wasn't in it, and it goes down.
So the power's gone down. People are sleeping in the streets. That's what you saw all night. Were you able to find members of your own family last night?
What is that?
Were you able to find members of your own family?
My own family, yes. Okay. I do, and they're all fine.
Well,
I've been calling the parents in Germany, and my sister was there, and she's doing okay. And you know, it's still the same thing. What's happening in Port-au-Prince? It's everywhere in Haiti right now.
When will the sun rise, Franz?
Okay, thank you.
When will
everyone wants? They don't know if it's going to come back again, and they don't know what to do right now.
But it's morning there. Yes, within the next hour, it will be daylight. What do you plan to do today? What do you plan to do today as part of the sort of aftermath, the recovery, as the morning begins in Port-au-Prince?
I don't know what I will do today. I don't know.
Boy, that says it all right there. Franz, you take care of yourself. We will talk to you throughout the day. Franz, can you tell me a little bit about the Haiti Foundation Against Poverty? What do you have to do today to help the people who are in the midst of this devastation?
If Haiti Foundation, if we can get people to give fresh air. And we need food, water, and everything they can get. On Haiti Foundation against poverty, we will do our best.
All right, Franz, you take care.
Well, Franz, wait before you go. We actually have your girlfriend on the line, Mallory Thurwell. She said she hasn't been able to connect with you all morning, and we have her on the line now. Mallory, are you there?
I'm here.
And you heard Franz's voice?
Yes, I did. It's wonderful to hear him.
Franz, can you hear Mallory?
Hey, Mallory, is that you?
Yes, it's me. You okay?
I'm like, do you know okay. about your granddaughter?
Who?
The second one is dying, and Michaela is okay so far.
Michaela's okay. McVie died.
Yeah, McVie died, and Michaela's okay. She has a hole.
What about Gerlik?
Yeah, well, she's at the Sister of Charity right now.
Okay.
Pressure.
Okay. I will try to get help to him.
What's that?
We'll try to get help to him.
Okay. All right, so take care of yourself, okay?
Okay. I love you.
Franz and Mallory, good luck to you. We will endeavor to reconnect you today. You're hearing there on The Takeaway the voices of people who are doing what thousands and thousands of people are attempting to do this morning, to reconnect, to make contact in the aftermath of the most devastating earthquake in Haiti in 200 years. I mean, that says it all right there.
Mallory is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. She's been trying to get a hold of Franz all morning.
And we don't know the specific context, but listen to what you heard there. The question of names. Did this person survive? Did this person not survive? Obviously, one person very close to them did not survive, but other members of the family did survive. Franz on his feet, no longer able to drive there in Port-au-Prince, and Mallory, through us, able to get in touch with him.
Okay, let's go now to our own Takeaway correspondent, Femi Oke. Femi actually spent the night with Haitians in New York who were trying to get information about what's happening there at home. Good morning, Femi.
Good morning to you, Celeste.
Can you describe what the scene was like last night as there were people there trying to get news of their loved ones?
I was in Queens, and I was between two places. I was at a big Haitian restaurant called the Brasserie Creole Restaurant, and it just became a very natural gathering point. There were a number of TVs up with 24-hour cable news blasting out, people trying to text, getting emails, sharing the little bit of information that they could get hold of. And then just along the street was a much bigger, more formal organization, and that is the Haitian Americans United for Peace. And they actually are set up to deal with emergencies just like this, and they were very much a focal point for information coming in from Haiti and also people calling them to find out what's happened to their relatives, where they are, how they get help to them. And just bit by bit, as hour by hour went by, more and more information was coming in.
Well, you spoke with several people at the group Haitian Americans United for Progress, but even there, people were just distraught as they tried to get some kind of news. This is the voice of Poudin Devarot.
It hurt me so badly. I don't know what to say. Am I going to sleep tonight? I don't know.
Was that the general concern, that they were just trying to get any information out of Port-au-Prince, where communication lines were down?
People were desperate, and I was with Elsie St-Louis Asselien. She's the executive director of the Haitian Americans United for Peace organization, and she said the biggest problem was fear, just not knowing, not hearing from your relatives. And the reason Poudin, who you just heard there, sounded so distraught was because as I was working with this agency, they were seeing pictures being emailed in from Haiti, and there was no sensor on these pictures, so you were seeing people losing bits of limbs, there were bloody bits of body, there was awful scenes of places that they knew very, very well, absolutely destroyed, and there was no filter. People were just sending them, like, here's this place, the presidential palace, the roof has collapsed on parts of it. So they were just getting that information in real time, uncensored, and that's why Prudence Devereaux sounded so distraught to see Haiti looking in such a state.
Well, this is actually the sound of Rico Dupuis from Radio Soleil actually saying that their phone lines are getting jammed.
Every single person who called wants to know, really, if that area was impacted, trying to find out if their family have been spared. And the only reason we don't see all the phones lit at the same time is because we've been telling them, please, 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 give us a break. Don't call us. Let us get the information. If you call us, you're slowing the process.
And in fact, we heard earlier two people, France and Neptune and his girlfriend Mallory Thurwell, who are able to get back in touch on this air. If you do want to inquire about your family, you can call the State Department at 888-407-4747. This is The Takeaway. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. The first report spoke of hearing the sound of voices howling, people lost, people in pain, people in shock. And the haiku sparks of people launching messages out to the world soon followed. The clipped rhythm of Twitter feeds, part information, part prayer, sparking across the internet, saying more in sentence fragments than news anchors could say in an hour of recaps and windy vamping. Here's just 140 characters from a local aid worker, Karen Ashmore. At least two hospitals collapsed. People are going by on stretchers. No phone service, no electricity. Port-au-Prince dark, except for fires. And later, if stable buildings collapse, we know the grain mills, sugarcane mills, and rainwater cisterns that Lambie Fund helped support collapsed. This journalist sent this on Twitter. It's part headline, part heartbreak. Quake happened as sun was setting, but in plenty of time to see that all the slum houses built into the hillsides disappeared. Carol Pedre, a local radio and TV host, tweeted this beacon of hope. If you need to get in touch with friends and family in Haiti, send me a private message with names and phone numbers. I'll get back to you. But he was in the middle of it himself. Aftershock every 10 minutes. I can't stay where I am. I have to be in a safe place. I got all the message. I will do best to call your family. For hours, nothing. Then at 10 minutes of 3 this morning, I am back. Meanwhile, the Associated Press begins to assemble a bigger image of this disaster. Many gravely injured people sit in the streets, pleading for doctors. At a wrecked hospital, people screamed for help. Thousands gathered in public squares late into the night, singing hymns and weeping. Richard Morse is a musician on Twitter who runs the Hotel Olufsen, apparently still intact. It's 8:44 p.m. and we're still getting aftershocks. I can hear people gathered in the distance, singing prayers. Then about 9 p.m., phones are mostly down, but sometimes you get lucky. This at just about the same moment from the AP. An aid official says Haiti is a scene of total disaster and chaos after being hit by a powerful earthquake. The chaos was reported by a Catholic Relief Services representative in the capital, Port-au-Prince, who spoke to U.S. colleagues before the phone service failed. Minutes later, Richard Morse tweets this grim observation. If the Montana Hotel and the Hotel Christopher are gone, I don't know where the UN leadership is. The AP, meanwhile, declares it is officially in the dark about most of the details. The scope of the disaster remains unclear, and even a rough estimate of the number of casualties is impossible. Among the missing are UN personnel. Someone was looking for her cousin, staying at the Hotel Montana. I'm not sure Montana is gone, but someone told me they saw it destroyed. Don't know what to tell you. Sorry. Another message. My mom just showed up at the Olufsen. Sigh of relief. An hour later. It's getting quieter in Port-au-Prince. Singing and praying I was hearing earlier has died down. No helicopters, no sound of ambulances. As darkness takes hold in a blackout that hides even the dead, the digital campfires start to dim. Richard Morris at 10:15. When my batteries die, I will no longer be able to communicate. It's going to be a long night. Our prayers go out to everyone. And about an hour later, we're okay. Freaked out, but okay. As day breaks, the images are telling another story now, crowding out the first ephemeral impressions of a nighttime disaster the people of Haiti will never forget.
You're listening to The Takeaway from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. I'm Celeste Headley here with John Hockenberry. And all morning we will bring you updates from the devastating earthquake in Haiti. But we'd like to hear from you if you have updates in your own family and among your own friends. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org to give us a sense of how you're reacting, especially Haitian Americans, to the earthquake in Port-au-Prince. First, here's a story on Leading Stories at 47 minutes after the hour. Aftershocks have been rattling the devastated capital of Haiti following yesterday's 7.0 magnitude quake. Dazed and injured people have been pleading for help on the streets. Many of the dead are lying among collapsed buildings in the capital. Meanwhile, the Red Cross and other aid groups are readying a major disaster relief effort in the area. It's been called the strongest earthquake to hit the Caribbean nation in more than 200 years. The Red Cross says as many as 3 million people are affected.
And we can check on some of the other stories we're following this morning. In the past hour, Yemeni officials say their troops have killed the leader of an al-Qaeda cell in the east of that country. Back at home, President Obama and Democratic leaders meet this morning to hammer out details for that final health care overhaul bill. And top bank executives can expect a grilling today when they appear before a panel investigating the causes of the financial meltdown. Four of Wall Street's top bosses from Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, and J.P. Morgan are expected to give testimony before the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. And staying in finance, here's a big story this morning. Search engine giant Google has announced that the company suffered a focused and sophisticated cyber attack from China, and that the result of that may be that it severs its working relationship with the Chinese economy. Joining us is Clive Thompson, tech blogger, contributing writer for New York Times Magazine and Wired. Clive, good morning.
Good morning.
Normally, a company working in China capitulates when there's this kind of a conflict, but Google seems to be standing tough. What's going on here, and what's the nature of this attack?
Well, the nature of the attack appears to be that that they had a very serious corporate intrusion. They had some attacks that reached right inside their own network. It was looking for a bunch of information, apparently including information about people that have been doing work on human rights in China, and there was some Gmail accounts that were compromised, but more worryingly for Google, what appears to have been compromised, according to people close to the situation, is it's sort of an internal system that's used normally to help comply with requests from the Chinese government. So it was a very sophisticated, very deep attack, and it appears to have originated right inside China. And the clear allegation here is that the Chinese government itself either was behind or is certainly supporting this intrusion. That's if you read between the lines, that's what Google's announcement is about. When they say that they can no longer tolerate the business environment in China, that is a straightforward allusion to the idea that that the Chinese government is not only looking the other way, but maybe even behind these attacks.
And Google has invested billions in China, so to walk away from it would be a significant sort of reversal, financially speaking. Before we go, Clive, give us a sense. We were just reading some tweets and some sense of the social media coming out of Haiti. As a blogger, are you monitoring some of that in the aftermath of this earthquake in Port-au-Prince?
Yeah, I am, and the thing that's very interesting is that Twitter has this thing that's called the trending topics, right? And so whatever people are talking about the most, you will see when you log on to Twitter. And it was very interesting watching how, because you got this very quick surge in volume, I was alerted to what was going on through Twitter. Was the first place I saw this happening. I could see the trending topics happening. And as new things have come up, like places where you can donate money, those have begun to arise too. I clicked on this trending topic, YELE, didn't know what it was. Turns out it's the major way you can donate money right now to help the relief. So Twitter has been this sort of like rapid response, bringing stuff that you didn't know was happening with Haiti to your attention, sort of in the corner of your eyes. So we're seeing this over and over again in
big
emergency
news
situations.
Right. Well,
news stories.
It's a conduit of information and also a conduit of aid. And there's a link to that site on our site, thetakeaway.org. Clive Thompson, tech blogger, contributing writer for our partner, the New York Times Magazine and Wired. Thanks so much.
And joining us again now is Mallory Thurlow. She's the founder and director of Haiti Against Poverty. She joins us from Grand Rapids, Michigan. And earlier on the program, Mallory, we got you in touch with your boyfriend, Franz Neptune, who's in Port-au-Prince, and you'd been trying to contact him all night.
Hey, Mallory. that you?
Yes, it's me. You okay?
I'm like, do you know about my granddaughter?
Who?
The second one is die, and Michaela is okay so far.
Michaela's okay. Migvi died.
Yeah, Migvi died, and Michaela's okay. She has a hole.
What about Gerlik?
Well, she's at the seat of charity right now.
Okay.
Mallory, that's you speaking with your boyfriend Franz Neptune, who's an aid worker in Port-au-Prince. What member of your family? Was that you just getting news of a member of the family that passed away?
That is my goddaughter's older sister, who was only a year and a half.
Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry.
She's the most... I just got pictures of her. I was just down there last week, a couple weeks ago, to celebrate my goddaughter's baptism, and everyone that I show Migvi's picture to just says she's the cutest girl that ever lived.
When you, it's hard to, in the face of such devastation to even think about what your next step is. But do you have plans for visiting Haiti, for getting down there? How are you going to get help to family and friends that are there?
Absolutely. We're trying to get a medical team mobilized. We have a pediatrician, OBGYN, neonatal nurse, and an ER doctor, all who work within our organization that are ready to go. We're looking for the best way to get in the country so we can reach. We have an elementary school of 140 students. I've yet to hear any word on the condition of the school. It's near City Soleil. A lot of the kids' homes are not even built of a concrete structure. We're talking tin shacks or sides of porta potties nailed together. I have no idea the condition of this area. And we have a clinic there that we're hoping is still standing that we can get aid to. And we're looking to get a structure built. We have women and children right now that we work with roaming the streets. Their houses are gone, and they're going to need a safe place that they can rest.
Well, Franz, your boyfriend was saying that one school he passed by, I believe, Celeste...
150 kids, and it had collapsed.
150 kids collapsed in a school.
Oh, it really is absolutely sickening. When I was on the phone with him last night, was the last time I could speak with him, about 6:20, just after the first aftershock hit, and I could barely hear him yelling in the phone at me because the screams of the people under the rubble were so loud in the background. I will never forget it my entire life.
So you were speaking to him on the phone. You could hear screaming in the background. You got cut off, and that was the last that you spoke to him all night.
Yes, it was. And after that, they've been having multiple aftershocks. And at that point in time, Franz and the guest house manager, Gertrude, and the family that I am the closest to, they had found each other, but they were going inside the basement of a building to seek shelter. They just didn't know what to do in an earthquake situation. So I was frantically trying to tell them to stay outside and be clear of things that could fall, that more shakes are coming. At that point, they actually called me thinking that this was a worldwide thing, and that asking if I was okay and if my family was okay here in Michigan.
Do you have...
And I was able to relay to them that this was a strictly a Port-au-Prince earthquake.
Do you have other family members or friends that you have not gotten word about?
Many, hundreds. I've been traveling back and forth for 6 years now since I was 16.
Mallory,
and
We've got just a minute to go. You are going back and forth between your own personal grief and also having to mobilize to help the people. How do you do that?
A lot of prayer. Lifting up a lot of prayer.
Well, good luck to you. And there's a lot to accomplish today. You're mobilizing a medical team and trying to get contact with your own friends and family.
Mallory Thurlow, join us from Grand Rapids, Michigan. She is the founder and director of Haiti Against Poverty.
We want to hear from the Haitian American community. There are people all over the world doing what Mallory is doing this morning.
Yes, good morning. My name is Ronald Gabriel. I was trying to reach Haiti the whole afternoon yesterday. I couldn't do it. I'm very worried about my cousin that lives in Delma 33rd, next to a ravine. I'm very worried about it.
How are you dealing with the news out of Port-au-Prince? Tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
Again, if you want to get news, you can call the State Department at 888-407-4747. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.